Hello everyone, this is Tom Fox and back for another episode of Unbalanced and Unfair. Did I get that right?
Yes.
With Roy Snell, our podcast. And I am in sunny and gorgeous Minneapolis today. I want to thank you for arranging this weather. This is about as perfect as I think things can get.
You're welcome. So,
always great to be back. And Roy, you wrote recently a blog post where you talked about victimization. And I really wanted to ask you about that. And how does victimization work into some of the concepts, greater concepts of compliance that we both talk about from time to time?
Well, it was an article about Richard Bistrong, who did some jail time for bribery. I went and saw him speak locally. And make a long story short, he talked about his whole story for about an hour and then took a half an hour of questions. And what was interesting is it appears as though the 50 people that were in the room, who are all very experienced attorneys or compliance folks, and they had huge empathy for him, and they spent 30 minutes, the entire time was devoted to trying to give him an excuse or someone to blame for his actions. For example, somebody said, "Well, what it was? It wasn't it really all about sales quotas?" And Richard was a salesman, and his sales were very, very strong, partly because he bribed a lot of people through third parties, and they would go through some elaborate description of how it's all the fault of goals and objectives and sales quotas. And Richard would smile like a Cheshire cat, wait patiently until they're done, and say, "No, it's on me. I did it. I'm not using that excuse." Another one was somebody said, "Well, you can't you blame it on the company and inadequate training?" He says, "Well, I got my training in 96. In 96, there wasn't much FCPA training. They actually gave me the FCPA law and told me about it, which was probably about average training for the time. I can't blame them." And the bottom line is and a point in the article that a lot of people are missing because they become so interested in everything I said about Richard, which is understandable, but they missed kind of the point that we have an incredible number of people claiming to be victims in this country. And in the compliance and ethics field, anybody ever gets caught or gets in trouble, they immediately blame, "I was forced to do this by supervisors," or "forced to do this by leadership," or "I was forced to do this by competitive forces in a free market system." And we seem to be, as a society, allowing everybody to play the victim card. And what we're doing is inadvertently allowing everybody to cover up their lack of principles or their lack of ability to stand up for their own principles. Richard wouldn't do it. 30 minutes he went through people, and you can imagine how tempting it was to sit there and say, "Yeah, you know, you're right, you know, thanks for you saying. If I said it, I'd look like I was blaming him, but you said it, so I'm going to kind of tacitly support your excuse for me." And he just wouldn't do it. He repeated it a half a dozen times. "It's on me. I'm willing to talk about how this happens and how to prevent it, but don't interpret it, any of it, as excuses." It was the most remarkable thing I've ever seen with regard to somebody standing up against victimization and people playing the victim card, and I thought it was amazing.
How does that work into the concept of a compliance program which is designed to prevent, detect, and remediate? If you put the responsibility on the individual employee, what does that leave for the responsibility of the company?
Yeah, you know, it's a balance. You know, we've got to have everybody accountable. Everybody's got to do their thing. Leadership has to send a very strong message on a regular basis. Middle management needs to do a better job of being engaged and asking people if they've seen any problems and telling people that the unethical behavior and breaking the rule of law is not acceptable. I just think we emphasize too much. No, we don't emphasize too much. We adequately emphasize the role of the board. We adequately emphasize the role of the CEO and the C-suite. And we adequately emphasize the role of middle management. But we all seem to be just given all the employees that are not falling into those aforementioned categories a free pass. If you get in trouble, not only are we going to accept the fact that you're going to blame somebody else for pressuring you into doing it or not teaching you enough, we're going to give you this free pass, and we're going to encourage you to use that excuse. And I'm saying at some point we have to say to people, you have a role in all this too. You got to be willing to stand up to what might be some pressure to do wrong. And I got to tell you, I think people are, you know, we got to have goals. We got to have objectives. We want to grow. We want to sell. We want to do stuff. People can say, I want to hit my goals without somebody in the trenches saying, oh, you mean break the law. I don't think that's what they're saying. They're saying, there's a lot of other reasons to hit the goals, to make more money, to keep the company sound, to get more money, to have more benefits and hire more people and work out of better buildings. And you know, there's a lot of reasons to have goals. And the ethicists, I'm sorry, are making it sound like the only reason to say we have to hit our goals is to wink, wink, nod, nod, tell the people in the trenches to lie, cheat, and steal to achieve it. And I think that's unfair. I don't think that's right. And I think that a lot of people are seeing ghosts. When they hear hit your goals, they are inserting inappropriately, unfairly, that means lie, cheat, and steal. And I'm calling them out on it. And I don't think enough people are equally burdening the average employee with the responsibility to stand up against wrongdoing. And they're all too often giving them an out to play the victim card if they do get caught.
Well, that's certainly a nice theory, but when you're down in the trenches in practice, I often tell the apocryphal story of the following. A regional manager in, you name the country, says the following. If I violate the code of conduct, I may or may not get caught. If I violate the code of conduct and get caught, I may or may not be disciplined. If I miss my numbers for two quarters, I'm fired. Well, that message that employee received was never miss your numbers. And if that's the message in your sales goals, you're putting a pretty strong burden on an employee to choose between putting bread on the table for his family versus maybe he'll get caught or maybe he won't.
Let's say you walk by a valuable item in a store and the clerk is in the back room and there's no cameras or whatever. I mean, we have the opportunity to lie, cheat, and steal and get away with it all the time. At some point, we have to stand up to it as individuals. I just believe that goals and objectives and being measured at work is a logical, practical, appropriate thing. And, you know, if you can't be an effective salesman without lying, cheating, and stealing, maybe you're in the wrong profession. Yeah, and certainly, I guess what I'm saying is, even though you might be disciplined, you might be fired for not being able to do your job, I think that's a horrible excuse to abandon your principles of being ethical. There's an all-out war on business objectives, and it's being blamed for people who choose to do wrong. I think we need business objectives, and we need to be able to say to the people, don't lie, cheat, and steal, you'll be fired, and I'm going to look harder than anybody else to find you and fire you if you lie, cheat, and steal. You know, I think it's on everybody in society. We got to stop blaming others for cheating, and we got to stop playing the victim card. And until we call people out for caving to some sort of pressure, here's the point. Here's the way to word it. I know people that won't lie, cheat, or steal for love nor money. And I look at them and I admire them. And they have all the pressures in the world, like everybody else. And I just don't see why everybody can't do it.
Maybe the balance might be there's a reason that there's a three prongs to a compliance program. Mm-hmm. And those prongs are prevent, detect, and remediate.
Yep.
So maybe part of that balance comes in the detect prong. That, or to channel my inner Ronnie Reagan, trust but verify.
Right.
So maybe it's the balance of all those three, and that what we really don't talk about, I would say even at all in our profession, is the victimization or personal responsibility. And by having that conversation, we're not saying the detect prong or the corporate responsibility is any less. It's just that sometimes you have to man up and stand up and say things, no, I'm not going to do it. But maybe even there's another part of this, which is that if the company says the right things, the company means the right things, and somehow the employee gets the wrong idea or observes conduct that he thinks is wrong, maybe that's a reason for a hotline.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a reason that we have anonymous reporting. Maybe that's a reason for whistleblowers.
Yeah.
So maybe there are if not balanced, you know, perhaps backup mechanisms that we should consider this. And I guess, Roy, what I'm hearing is, although you focus on victimization, because that was the question I asked you, this is really a compliance program. A compliance solution has many components.
Right.
And individual responsibility is certainly a part.
Yep.
But you talked about balance. I talked about the three prongs. And we can expand that to any number of specific items. And it's moving us towards the goal. And the goal is hopefully more ethical behavior. But we have a roadmap to do that.
Yeah. The I think you're absolutely onto it. Instead of my ranting and raving and whining, propose solutions that will get to the same point or emphasize elements of a compliance program like you have to get to the same point. I guess what I'm saying is, leadership and the compliance professional of the compliance department should be telling everybody, we're going to have goals. We're going to grow this company. We're going to be successful. We're going to measure people to see if they're getting their job done. But we are going to make it unbelievably clear to you that doesn't mean lie, cheat, or steal. And a matter of fact, we're going to audit and monitor and have hotlines to find people who lie, cheat, and steal. And say, and just have this very clear, constant conversation and message that here are some things you might end up thinking is encouraging you to do wrong. And we're telling you, no, those things are for other good reasons, like productivity or sales or whatever. You just got to have, you've got to be able to evaluate and measure employees. And to literally tell them in compliance training, don't ever interpret this as encouragement for lying, cheating, and stealing to hit your goals. We will not allow that. We will look for it. And now that we have told you in no uncertain terms that you are not to do that, particularly in relation to our encouragement to do better at your job, you aren't going to be able to play that victim card. I guess that's what I would like to see. Yes, I think we just see employees as all victims of everyone. And I think it's a sweeping generalization that in some cases is true and a lot of cases is not true. And I just don't like excuses. I don't like excuses. And that's what people do when they play the victim card. They're making excuses for their behavior. And if we want a civilized society and highly principled society and an ethical society, we've got to do all the things that you have been talking about. And we've got to start telling people you're personally accountable for how you behave. And don't let anybody or any perception of our company goals to cause you to abandon those.
You know, one of the things, you really don't have a lot of high horses, but one of the high horses I've heard you talk about over the years is a boring ethics training.
Yeah.
And how can a company communicate the message that you just articulated, which is we're going to do business, but we're going to do business in compliance with the law and not lying, cheating, and stealing? in a message that's other something other than right. I'm your dad and don't do this.
Yeah.
What's Roy's thoughts on non-boring ethics training?
Well, here's a point. Again, everybody's picking on leadership. Yeah, they all say leadership is bad and unethical and greedy. And I ask people, think about people that are leaders that are in your family. Are they greedy, unethical, terrible people? No. You're making a sweeping generalization about a group of people that I think is unfair. It's correct X percent of the time, and it's wrong to make sweeping generalizations about leadership a majority of the time. Negative sweeping generalizations are wrong. Here's what I will say, though. I think we don't have a problem with tone at the top. I think we have a staggeringly large problem with communicating the tone at the top. People do the code of conduct. They might even make people sign the code of conduct. They'll put on their email signature, we are an ethical company, and they'll put out the We Are an Ethical Company CEO video every year. And I recently wrote an article equating it to a K-cup, which is a single-serving cup of coffee that you put into a machine, and it runs water through it, and one time you get one cup of coffee. Now, if you use that same cup a second time, the second cup of coffee is going to be probably too diluted to drink, and the third will be terrible. And the 40th version of that cup of coffee through that same cup of single serving of coffee will look like water. And that's how we're passing on the message from the top. It's the same dang video, the same cautious message, the same uncreative message, the same no-risk message, the same tools that we've always used. And I think I see it like marketing. If you want to sell your product, you can't sound like everybody else. You can't say the same thing in every commercial. You have to do something that startles people a little bit or wakes them up or makes it interesting or is funny or creative. And I don't see a lot of that from the very cautious compliance community. And I also don't see it from the typical big company communications department, who every time they ever did anything silly got criticized, and they have been trained through criticism and praise to be as careful as you could be, and I don't see them taking a lot of risks. On the other hand, down the hall is the marketing department, who's sitting there deliberately trying to think of something that would be interesting or a little controversial, but not agitating anybody. Doing something different. I wouldn't go to necessarily just the comm department. Communication department is a great partner, but I would go to them for making sure that things are done right and look right. But when you want to get people's attention, I go to the marketing department and say, how do I market the compliance program? How do I market this thing I just talked about you are accountable? How do I market the tone at the top? I'll give you one example that I thought of that nobody's ever going to do because it's too weird. But that's the problem, is they won't do innovative because they got to look super professional and they're afraid to be criticized. I think it would be fun if some company, and I might have mentioned this in an earlier podcast, is to have the CEO go to the window on a rainy night in an alley of some building or whatever and open the window on the third story of this and just scream at the top of their lungs, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore, like the movie The Network. And the message for the rest of the video, short, interesting video, would be what the CEO doesn't want to take anymore is unethical behavior. If you just get on there and say, like Ken laid in the Enron video, the orientation video that said, we are an ethical company, it's going to, if you play that every year for 10 years, it's going to taste like the 10th use of a K-cup. And one last comment is there's a woman named Barbara Harmon, who's a compliance officer for Alyeska Pipeline. And let me just put it this way. Barbara and I grew up at a time where there were a lot of people who were out there. And it never left Barbara. And she is absolutely one of the most creative, risk-oriented compliance marketers, communicators within her company that I've ever met. And thank goodness Alyeska Pipeline Leadership lets her go. And every message she has a group of people say that was silly, or that was sophomoric, or that was, I don't get it, I don't get the joke. But 90% of the people look at it and pay more attention to it than the guy down the street at another company who's making the same boring, bland message for the 10th time, and it gets ignored. Barbara captures people's attention. She bombards them with this stuff like a marketing person, not a communications person. And so that is what I would say is the thing that bothers me the most about how we communicate and motivate and build awareness about ethics and compliance programs. I have a question for you that's kind of related.
All right.
How much time do we have left?
We've got time for a little bit more.
Okay. So this is kind of a new topic. You and I, Donna Boehm, and some others have talked about the rogue employee. And everybody seems to have a different perception of the rogue employee. And it kind of plays back to what we've been talking about. The
right.
Victimization, the people in the trenches are accountable. I'm not putting those words in your mouth. Those are my words. And that we've got to communicate effectively to these folks. And here's the controversy that I'd like you to talk about. Some people believe that there are companies out there doing a tremendous job and with their compliance program. Kind of like Morgan Stanley was given some credit for having great FCPA training, and they had, quote unquote, a rogue employee ignored some 33 emails?
35
emails talking about don't bribe people. And they got quite a bit of credit for that, and apparently went after the rogue employee. Other people think that companies that aren't trying hard enough immediately play the rogue employee card, and they may be fraught with problems, but they try and make it look in their press release when they get into trouble like it was just one person and all the rest is fine. And it's kind of a fun debate because I could kind of support either side, but I'll have an opinion after you're done.
Well, I love the myth of the rogue employee because it's a myth. There's no such thing as a rogue employee. Every corporation is responsible for its employees. That's a basic tenet of corporate law. But here's the thing. Every corporation accepts the profits that an employee who engages in bribery and corruption brings to the company. That's the thing about the FCPA and bribery and corruption is there's a corporate benefit for that. Fraud, typical fraud in a corporation, starting with employees cheating on their expense accounts to creating fake vendors or any other way to defraud the corporation of money, is taking money and keeping it personally. Typically, in the FCPA violation context, you have an employee who has engaged in bribery and corruption, certainly for their own benefit because they're going to get a bigger bonus, more commission, they'll get a raise, they'll get a promotion, or they may have to just to keep their job because my friend who is the hypothetical apocryphal regional manager will get fired if he misses his numbers for 2 months. But the corporation keeps the money. And that's the biggest thing that I think people miss about the myth of the rogue employee is the corporation benefits. And the corporation keeps the benefits of that. We've touched on several times throughout this podcast the holistic nature and approach of a compliance program, and it's prevent, detect, and remediate. A corporation has to detect. They have to put in place systems, policies, and procedures which allow them to detect illegal conduct. And that's part of a corporation's responsibility. They cannot simply say, go off and do good. That's the reason employees, the reason there are failures in best practices compliance programs, and I'm going to give out here probably one of the greatest truths that's never been revealed. So listen to this very carefully.
I love these.
The reason compliance programs fail is there are people involved. let me repeat that for those of you who didn't understand it the first time. There are people involved. Human beings. Human beings make mistakes. Sometimes they make intentional mistakes. Sometimes they make grossly negligent mistakes. And sometimes they engage in bribery and corruption. The reason you have companies with best practices compliance programs and employees who engage in bribery and corruption are their people. And that's just the way things are. So as long as people are involved in companies, you're going to have fraud. And as long as people are involved in companies, you're going to have bribery and corruption. Because people are going to receive some type of benefit and profit from doing so. So that's why you have to have a detect prong, and that's why companies have a responsibility to monitor, detect, and prevent. But more importantly, companies accept the benefit from bribery and corruption, and so they should be held accountable for that as well. And let me go back to Morgan Stanley, because the 35 compliance reminders over 7 years, that's certainly significant, but that doesn't begin to tell the entire story. The employee in question received annual FCPA training. He received annual code of conduct training. He received annual conflict of interest training. So he was the communications were made by the company down to the employee. Now, whether those communications were boring or not, I don't know the answer to that. But beyond the prevent prong, which was the communications made to the employee, including the 35 email reminders over 7 years, Morgan Stanley detected his nefarious conduct through transaction monitoring. So the detect prong worked for Morgan Stanley. And then they remediated as well, because they terminated the employee and filled in the gap that allowed him to exploit the system going forward. So we had Morgan Stanley with a best practice compliance program. We have a company employee, the rogue employee, who engaged in conduct which violated the FCPA, but we had each prong of the compliance program working. In addition, they self-disclosed to the Department of Justice, so that works into the DOJ's calculus as well. But I really want to focus on the three parts of the program worked. The reason it failed is you had a human being. And you're going to have human beings as long as we have human beings and people making sales. Until we move to the robotic era, then we may need another kind of compliance program. But right now, the reason companies with best practice compliance programs can't have employees who engage in conduct is people are involved.
But so I'm curious, though, because you've the myth of the rogue employee, but you described the ultimate rogue employee Morgan Stanley. So there's something you're saying that I'm not getting at yet, or I haven't drawn out of you yet. You don't want to accept the principle of the rogue employee, but not only did they do the training, they did the detecting, you know, there's nothing more they could do, and they still had employee commit bribe. It seems to me that's the definition of a rogue employee.
That seems to me to be the answer to why when people say, well, gosh, the FCPA isn't working, gosh, the law must be wrong because people are engaging in bribery and corruption. They're missing the people part. And the rogue employee part, every corporation puts out a press release saying it was a group, a single employee or a group of rogue employees, and they don't take responsibility at the corporate level.
I think where I'm going to come down on this, and I want to tease something we're going to talk about at the next podcast, I completely understand everybody's several people I respect's rejection of the rogue employee theory. It's like some of the other stuff I've talked about, victimization. It's just an excuse. I don't want to hear excuses. I want people to do their best to prevent, find, and fix these problems. So I buy what everybody's saying. But and I completely buy your position, but it sure sounds to me like every once in a while, and it's pretty rare, really, you could say, yeah, a rogue employee could have put Morgan Stanley in a world of hurt, but luckily the enforcement community was quite smart on this one.
I guess here's, if I can maybe articulate a better answer to your question. The myth of the rogue employee is used by corporations and their apologists to explain why corporations shouldn't be punished for their employees' FCPA violations. My response is that corporations benefit by their employees' FCPA violations, and number one. And number two, corporations have a responsibility because there's a prevent and detect prong to a best practices compliance program.
Yeah, I think that's a better explanation. And in terms of trying to get at what confuses me a little bit about rejecting all forever an instance of a rogue employee. It's funny because typically I'm taking your position. Stop giving me anecdotal stories, Roy, like Morgan Stanley. The fact of the matter is 95% of the time the rogue employee is played as an excuse for an organization that didn't make enough effort. And the teaser for the next podcast is, this is what infuriates me by people who say, if you just build an ethical culture, everything else would be fine. You don't really even need compliance. And what flies in the face of that is your well-articulated point that as long as human beings are involved, you can't really rely on even an incredibly fully functional compliance program and an incredible effort to build an ethical culture. There are human beings involved, and they're going to not only break the rule of law, but as Richard Bistrong will tell you, they're going to know how the whole system works and how to make sure that the red flags are faded, tattered pink, and that he won't get caught as easily.
Roy, with that, I think it's a good way to wrap up this podcast, so I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thanks, Tom.